Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM, good morning. So in 2014, the Taliban burst into a school in Pakistan and murdered 148 people. 132 children lost their lives that day, including Haris Nawaz. Now, his brother Ahmed was injured in the attack and he joins me on the line now to tell me about that day that is etched into his memory, his road to recovery and his incredible news that he announced just recently. Ahmed, good morning.
Good morning. I'm very good. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show. So let's start with the good news because we all need some. Can you tell us where you've been accepted to study?
I've recently been accepted to study at the University of Oxford for philosophy and theology.
Going to Oxford for anyone, it's a big deal. But for someone who has been through what you have, it is just incredible. Can you tell me, you were 14 and living in Pakistan. What was your life like then?
Well, it was quite ordinary for a Pakistani teenager. As you're aware, there were quite a lot of terrorist activities happening there in the northwestern region, especially around the 2014 time. And as a 14-year-old, I had gotten quite used to that kind of environment of terrorism and attacks happening here and there. But no one had ever expected a school to be attacked. And that's what made that attack of 2014 one of the most kind of horrible and one of the most unexpected attacks in the history.
Can you talk me through what happened on December 16th?
On the morning of 16 December, it felt quite normal. We went to the school like any normal kids do. We used to go in the school bus. And we went to classes. We had normal lessons like any kids would have. We were called to the auditorium for the first aid training, and that's where the incident happened. So a group of men of about 20 people entered the school hall where most of the school was sitting. So three of the year groups were sitting in that school hall. And a group of terrorists entered the school hall from the back of the school hall and just started firing all of a sudden at students randomly. And that was, I think, the most astonishing moment of my life, because I always thought that school was a safe place. I mean, there would be attacks happening in other parts of the city, and we would hear about attacks happening in markets near us. But no one ever thought that a school would be attacked. And I was just laying there when the terrorists entered the school hall and started shooting the students. And I was just hoping that this wasn't real until they came to the center of the hall and they said to each other that we're going to go and kill the people one by one. And they entered my row and they started killing my friends right in front of me. I was about fourth or fifth in that row. And I was just laying there on the floor, just waiting to die, really. And I just thought, there is absolutely no way that I'm surviving this. So I just stayed there. And when he came to me, I just flinched a bit to the right. And I was shot in the upper arm, so just below my shoulder. And he just went past. And he didn't really wait for the second shot. He just went past and I just stayed still there. I knew that I had been shot, but I realized that he was just still there. If I moved a little, he would shoot me another shot to just finish me off. And I was just, and I just stayed there for a while and just quietly, even though it was extremely painful. So the moment after I was shot, the pain just kicked in, and I just started feeling it extremely hard in my upper arm. So after about half an hour of that, the terrorists went out of the auditorium, the school hall. And that's when I just tried to pick up my arm. So when I tried to move my arm wasn't moving. And I just realized that the bone was completely broken. So I had to just pick up my arm and I just got up and just looked around if there's any rescuers here so that I can just get out of here. Because I was bleeding too much and I thought I might not survive if I stay here too long. That's when I moved into another room because I saw other injured people moving there. And I thought that might be a place where rescuers could find us, really. I went into that room. There were quite a few other injured people. There was a teacher there as well who was shot. And we all sat there waiting for rescuers to somehow come there. It was a little room, a very small room. All of a sudden, the terrorist entered that room and we all just started to pretend to be dead. Now, there were some kids who just couldn't hide their pain. So the terrorists started shooting everyone in that room again. And that's where I survived again. I didn't get a single shot because there was a body on top of me. And I just stayed there quietly, just not making any movement. Even though I was shot and it was extremely painful, I think it was just looking around and seeing my friends being in pain and seeing my friends just dead there. I think that was the hardest part. And that just kind of made me not think about my pain that much. And then about 2 hours later, the rescuers came and they took us to a hospital. And then I had the surgeries there, yeah.
You were 14 years old?
Yes, at that time.
When did you find out that your brother was killed?
I actually didn't know that for about 2 weeks.
Wow.
So I was in the hospital because I had quite severe injuries. The doctors had told my parents that I shouldn't find out about that. So I was lied to. I was told that he was in another hospital and that he had a leg injury, so he couldn't come to me. So I believed it. I was quite happy. I thought, like, you know, surviving that incident, I was quite happy with that. I don't know. For some reason, I did ask about him a lot and everyone just lied to me. But after 2 weeks, I found out on the internet after a friend messaged me about him.
How long were you in hospital for?
In Pakistan, I was about almost 2 months, actually. And
wow,
in the UK, I was also 1 month.
So you moved to the UK. When was that decision made? Was that soon after the attack?
Yeah. So that was after the attack. That was in... So when I was in the hospital, they said that my arm will need to be amputated because there was quite a lot of nerve damages and the artery that goes into the left arm is quite heavily damaged and... there is not much to the arm left, so it can't really be saved. It just needs to, the only solution is to amputate it, to just cut it off. Of course, my parents weren't going to let this happen since they had lost one child already, and it was just something that was so harsh to even think about. So the senior doctor said that this could be treated in the Birmingham, which specializes in gunshot wounds. And that's when the government decided to bring us here to the UK for treatment.
After witnessing that, I can't imagine how you're feeling and finding out about your brother and your arm and then moving to the UK. How were you dealing with it all?
It was extremely hard.
Yeah.
I think the harder part was the mental trauma than the physical pain. The physical pain kind of was around for about a year or 2 years, I think, because it was the nerve damage. So the nerves were quite painful for about 2 years. The biggest problem for me was the mental trauma. I couldn't sleep, of course. And starting a school again was, I think, extremely hard because, you know, you had to think about everything that had happened in the school.
Did you speak English?
I couldn't speak any English when I came here, so it was quite tough. And I just learned in my time at school, really.
Was it easy to make friends?
Initially, I found some really good people. People were quite accommodating and they were really nice. Over time, it just became easier because, you know... the cultural differences are something that also makes it quite hard to make this transition and just settle in into a school or into a new country in general.
Not only did you settle in, you excelled in your grades and they're pretty amazing.
I think when you go through something like that, you start to value everything a lot more. You start to value the opportunities that you get. And I think that's what I realized, that I need to, this is the second chance that I've been given at life. And perhaps I should start valuing everything that I have.
When did you make the decision to go to Oxford and how did that all come about?
I got into this independent grammar school. And I think that was an incredible transition because the people were quite smart in that school in general, and it pushed me a lot to just move up and learn more. And I think that's when I realized that I could have a chance at Oxford if I did work enough and if I worked right over the next few years.
You certainly did. You've been honoured for your services for the education of youngsters. Can you tell me about your work as an anti-radicalisation campaigner?
Yes. So when I came to the UK, this was a very big problem, and not just in the UK, but in other countries as well. And the problem was of radicalization. So young people from these countries, from these Western countries, were going towards the terrorist groups like ISIS or other groups in Syria and Iraq. And When I heard that news first here in the UK, I was so shocked. I was just thinking to myself, why would a young person with so many privileges in the UK just leave everything and just go to those terrorist groups, just join those to just kill innocent people? And this thought kind of unsettled me too much. I was just in the hospital for a month, and I used to think about this. And I decided when I came out of the hospital, I decided that I wanted to do something to stop that process of radicalization. Mm. And I thought the best way to go about that would be to share my own experience with these young people and tell them that I am a victim of those terrorists towards whom you're going. And I thought that being a youngster myself, being of the similar age, I thought this message could be impactful in showing them the impacts of what had happened and what these terrorists can do. So I set out on a campaign, went to a lot of different schools around the UK, and speaking to youngsters, it was one of the most incredible journeys, and it still is. I do still go to quite a few schools, but the problem of radicalization has decreased quite significantly. It has shifted to a different kind of radicalization now. I've also been working on this issue of the provision of education in general, because I realized, so the attack where it happened in Pakistan, the northwest region of Pakistan, I wanted to do something to make sure that I could do something for that area as well, yeah, to prevent radicalization there, to stop this extremism in that area, because I had lived there my whole life and I was quite passionate about doing something there as well. So I did a lot of research and I thought about it, and I was just thinking, what was the reason that these people attacked our school? And I came to the conclusion that it was because they were illiterate and they were vulnerable to these radical ideologies. And that's why they became these extremists and attacked our school. And so education played an extremely important part, because in that northwest region, the literacy rate is extremely low. It's about 15 to 20%, which is extremely, extremely low. So I decided that I would also focus on the provision of education in those kind of deprived parts of the world in order to prevent these kind of incidents from
good
happening.
On you. Ahmed, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be hearing more incredible things from you. Good luck in Oxford, and thanks for sharing your story on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye. There we go. What do you make of that? That is, it kind of puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? I mean, he was 14 years of age when he witnessed that. It's just quite unbelievable. You can text me 51552. Let me know your thoughts on that. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.